Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. Hey, you know, I know you've prompted me, and I am guilty of not getting as far as I wanted to on the book we're working on. I also got word that the site redirect is going to, or the site updates that are happening this month, has got postponed a couple of weeks. So I now have time. So I better,
ooh,
I have no excuse. I got to get back to work on the book. But one of the things, and you mentioned it as we were getting started here, is that apparently you got a question or something that somebody said, why do we start with gaps? And I know that that's a feature in the book pretty early on, is understanding where those differences are that then allow you to create a plan or create a structure in your organization or both.
Yeah, I think back in, you know, decades ago, I didn't do a gap analysis, you know, when I first started out. That was not part of the process. See, the process was you have a new project, develop a plan.
I remember you talking about that plan. You went and got every single activity you could find and listed them out. And it was kind of a non-starter.
Right. Not the way to go.
No.
But even if you have a preferred list, let's say you're a reliability engineer and you have your top 10 methods that you have experience with, and someone says, okay, we have the new widget, and so you develop a plan with the top 10 methods, that's still not the right way to go.
Well, those are the things I know how to do. You know, every problem can be solved with the hammers and my tool, or the hammer that I have, right? What's wrong with that?
Yeah. What's wrong with that? So then independently, both of us in our careers, and we're not the only ones, have inserted a gap analysis before you determine which tools to use. And in listening to clients, it's not necessarily intuitive. In other words, the question becomes, why do you do a gap analysis?
Yeah.
And how does that work? And why is that ahead of plan? Why not just write the plan?
Well, it was one of the things I learned early on when I was being basically trained and groomed to become a consultant when I was at Hewlett-Packard. I was in a corporate tech group, and part of our role was very much like a consultant. And part of that training was listen, right? And what is it they're presenting problem in our examples would be, hey, we need a reliability plan. And so a client would ask, I need a reliability plan. Well, why do they need it? What is they trying to achieve? What's the outcome? You know, why do they need us to write a reliability plan for them? Or why do they need their reliability team to do that? Why doesn't it already exist? Where's the difference or problem or barrier or whatever? But more importantly was, what do you need a plan for? I mean, we could write a plan and put it on the shelf and nobody look at it. What's the point in that? And so you start asking that question of, well, what do you need that for? If you have a plan, what do you have then? And and they say, well, then we know what to do. And says, well, if you know what to do, what does that get you? And you keep asking that until it becomes a more foundational or fundamental. It's like five whys, right? And usually somewhere buried in there, there's a vision or a desired outcome of, oh, we have happy customers because they get a product that works, you know, kind of thing. Right. Right. So you get to a level like that, but that starts to become, well, how do I judge if this plan that we're creating is actually going to be any good or not? Is it going to, how do we know at the end of the time that this was the right plan or not? How do we judge that? What's the measure? And so some of those techniques were really at aiming, identifying, well, what's the problem? What's the barriers and challenges and constraints and all of those things to creating a plan or a structure, or even if the plan is the right thing to get them where they want to go, right? It opens up so many other variables than just sitting down and pulling up my favorite 10 activities and put them in order. I mean, I can
It does. Yeah, that's easy to do. And to some degree, even though MIL Standard 785, I forget the title, but it's basically a reliability program plan, because it had what appeared to be a list of tools. I mean, 785 did say you should tailor the plan to the circumstances of the company.
Yeah, people seem to forget that. Too many people forgot that sentence. They would just tear off the cover, put their own cover on it, and say, here's our plan. All right, well.
Right. So the ridiculous. Default with a lot of people was just to use those tools, and that became the plan. And that's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Some of this has to do with our own blind spots. There's a bit of humility here, which is, as experienced as we are, we may have certain hobby horses or certain things that we're most familiar with or comfort zones. And so we'll tend to go in a certain direction. And the best reliability engineers have very good vision, able to see 360 degrees, so to speak. In other words, you can see all around you, and your mind is open when you start. And you don't walk in with pre-fixed ideas. Now, you may have your experience, and that's good. But you at least want to start from a viewpoint of listening, like you said, and having your mind open. And that's an important beginning element. But, you know, in our preliminary conversation, before you hit the record button, we were mentioning that there's something even before the gap analysis. Like, I've learned gap analysis is so important. But even before you do the gap analysis, you have to talk about, understand where you're headed. What's the direction?
Well, there's two parts. I think it's part and parcel all to the same piece, right, is we're doing a gap analysis, and a gap means there's a separation or a difference, and we're looking for those ones that need to be jumped over or crossed or closed or whatever the right term is. And we should define gap analysis as we're trying to understand what activities or tasks or information that we need to plan to create or do and learn from in order to achieve our objectives. And I think that's where you're heading now is, well, what are the objectives? Where are you trying to get to?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Because you can't develop a gap unless you know where you're headed. So the reliability objectives, and I don't just mean numbers.
Oh, we want to be 99. We don't want any failures. We want a reliable product.
Yeah.
Right? No.
There's more to it than that.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean? I mean, you've talked about this before, but what do you mean there's more to it than that? Here's the reliability goal. We want 98% reliable in 5 years. What's wrong with that?
Okay, so that's a numerical goal. First of all, at minimum, we have to break down the definition of reliability, because the 99% reliability is one of the four elements of reliability. So it's the probability that the item will achieve what? Its intended function, what it's supposed to do. So you have to define what it's supposed to do as part of it. And then it says...
And that's common, right? People often do an engineering requirements document or a marketing requirements document, and that's full of that kind of stuff, right? But it's the core piece, like a car should be able to start and go to the grocery store.
Yes. So what it's intended to do is important. Mm-hmm. And then under the operating conditions, and that has to be well defined. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the objective of where you're going, is what are the operating conditions that you expect to be robust to. And then there's the element of time. And so you've got these four elements that are the minimum starting point for reliability objectives.
Yeah. Now, see, I thought you were heading somewhere else. I mean, the objective.
And I actually am.
Okay. Yeah. Because we could pull any number out of the hat we want and make that the goal. And as you know, I always want to tie those to either customer expectations or business requirements or both. right? It's got to have a larger, the probability piece and the duration piece, and basically what we're trying to design, all of that has a different, is not just a specification in a document. It is being driven by some other factor, usually customers and business requirements.
Exactly. And so the reliability requirements are important, but that's not all of what the vision is. For example, things like where should the product or the brand be positioned relative to competition? So you have a competitive element. You want to be a leader in this, in exactly what, over what period of time? That's part of it.
Yeah, or do we want to be the middle of the pack and we'll have other functions of our product, either, you know, like feature set or availability or whatever, will be the primary piece of it, where mm-hmm. the reliability is just middle of the pack. But that changes then how we go about defining, do we need 98% reliable or do we need 94%? We can do comparative studies to figure out where we need to be relative to those other ones. That's kind of what I think is important, is you got to anchor that in some rationale of what's important to the business.
Exactly. The reliability requirement, or the numerical representation of that requirement, comes after you define where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And another important element is warranty or servicing. And that has a cost element, that has a brand recognition or element. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so where do you want to be on that space? Do you want, and then you can develop the numbers that are associated with that vision. What about infrastructure? Do you want reliability to be part of your company process? Do you want to outsource your reliability? You know, where are you headed in terms of staffing, training, skills, methods?
Now you're talking more about like the culture piece. Want to inherently build this, or are we going to outsource it and hope for the best? Mm-hmm. Well, I have my own opinions about outsourcing that, but
sure, so do I. And so when I arrive at a company, I learned this years ago. I learned the hard way, by doing it wrong first and then learning how to do it right. But I learned that I always start on a visit with a company by talking with management. Mm-hmm. And to see, where do you want to be in relation to your competition, in relation to your company? Where do you want to be in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? Safety, reliability, availability, all those subjects. Mm-hmm. How important is it to you that out the door you have no problems, or are you willing to accept some problems and then get them fixed in order to be first? In other words, what is speed, fast to market in relation to reliability? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have my own opinions on that, but I want to listen to a company first.
Well, yeah, if they're making industrial equipment and they're making one a quarter, they can learn a lot on the first two, and they probably will, right? But if you're doing 10 million and they go on the shelves for the holiday season consumer products, you don't get a second chance. So sometimes it's driven by the nature of the business and their market. But yes. do you have much trouble with people, you know, being able to answer those questions, or are you half coaching as you're doing those kinds of discussions?
I don't have trouble getting answers if we direct the questioning in the right way. But I've often found that the discussion opens up more clarity. It's a topic that is sometimes well understood by a company, and sometimes it's not really been thought through as well as it should be.
Yeah, yeah. But once you get a clear picture of where they want to be, right, then I imagine, and it's the same thing I do, is start talking to folks all across the organization in different roles and functions in the group, and, well, what do you do? What are your current practices? You know, and it might be they pull out their 10 favorite tools or the plan from last time and just do it again. Things like that. Or they have pockets that they do really, really well and other places they don't do so well. But that's the other half, isn't it, Carl?
Yes,
once you know where you're going, you got to know where you're at.
Yeah, you do. And so that's the, so the gap, as you pointed out, is a delta from where you want to be to where you are today. So once you've got the vision, and that doesn't take that long to identify, mm-mm, now you want to say, where are we today in terms of achieving that vision? And there's two aspects of that. There's the methods, and then there's the organizational.
Yeah, see, I add a third part. It's unless you're including in the organizational, which I'm interpreting as infrastructure and how they're mm-hmm. organized essentially, but infrastructure, how's data moving? Do they have a facilities and labs and failure analysis equipment, and what kind of expertise they have, you know, and what kind of skill sets they have? A lot of those organizational things. And then technique wise is, you know, do they do FMEA and HALT, and do they know what they are, and do they do them well or not? But I think there's a third element there is their culture, how they think about using these tools, or how do they approach using yeah. these things. I think that's a key piece to knowing where you are.
Yeah, good point, Fred. I agree that the culture is definitely part of the current scene, because you could have a culture that's really innovative and creative, but doesn't necessarily think a lot about reliability. You could have a culture that's very stodgy, slow. I mean, culture is whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And there are good cultures and bad cultures, but you need to know what it is.
Yeah.
So I agree. That's a good third element.
Yeah. One of the tells on the culture for me, and I think it helps explain it to our listeners, is that in a reliability culture, if the generic sense is that you're blaming the customer, well, they shouldn't have used it that way, they always complain, it's we hire the best engineers, so it must be reliable, there's no goals, there's no, you know, it's basically, it's not our fault, man, we did a good product, it's they broke it. That's not a good culture. Ooh, concerning
not
reliability.
Not a good culture at all, yeah.
Right? Now, concerning reliability, now they might be brilliant engineers and do all kinds of other cool stuff, and they may be stodgy, or I've seen it both ways, stodgy and innovative. It's the thought process towards reliability. Another style that's very, very common is, oh, well, when the product fails in the field, we jump right on it and we fix it. Right. Or we see a failure in a prototype. Well, it was only one prototype, so we wait till it happens twice and then we go fix it. But basically, they react to problems. The only time management gets involved is when it's a major customer that's complaining that there's too many failures. And then they get involved and say, hey, you got to fix reliability. And they allocate some resources to it. That's a reactive culture. And it can
versus
be really, really good.
Preventive culture, which right. would be the ones that try to do it right in the first place.
Well, yeah, and they try to anticipate and look forward to stuff. And so the very first group there, to make it more concrete, is they would go, HALT, what's that? Why would we want to use that? Right?
Yes.
Right? That'd be, they just ignore reliability and it just happens to them.
You've helped me understand something a number of years ago when we were talking about this subject, which is when you get to the methods portion, we've talked about organizational gaps, mm-hmm. culture gaps. When you get to the methods, you can use a series of questions that go something like, to what extent do you use this method?
That's right.
And then how do you use it? Why do you use it? And then go look at examples mm-hmm, mm-hmm. of them using it. And that's a really disciplined process that helps you identify the gaps.
It does. And I think we had other podcasts, and it's a big chunk of our book too, is doing the analysis of where you're at right now. But it's aimed at then allowing you to compare. Now, one of the things I learned early on, when I was first heard about this, the gap analysis idea, was that if you're sitting where you are now and you understand even what you're doing right now, and you know you want to get better, but you haven't defined, you don't know what that means to be better. You know, somebody comes in and says, you know, Carl, make our products more reliable. Right? All right. Well, well, how much more reliable? And what are the, sitting where I'm at now in the valley of despair, I just see mountains around me, right? I just see barriers, and I don't have enough samples. I don't have time. I don't have enough resources. I don't have facilities. I don't have the culture. I have all these problems. One of the steps in understanding where your opportunities are, where the gaps that are solvable and need to be solved, is shift your frame of mind. Go to that. What would happen if you achieved your vision? You're the leading supplier and recognized reliability leader in your industry, and you're on the cover of your local trade magazine as being exemplary in this particular issue, or whatever it is that you define as success. Put yourself there, put your organization there, and then look back, basically, figuratively, looking back at, well, how did you get there, right? So it's a subtle shift, but if you're sitting on top of the mountain, it's a lot easier to see where the passes are and where the paths are that got you there.
That's a great point. So right? you're essentially using visualization. Yeah. Visualize yourself or your company being at that mountaintop. And what does it look like? And then it really helps in the conversation. I was also thinking, Fred, that that an important reason why, because the topic we're really talking about is why do you start with gaps? Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is because of the prioritization. It isn't just a matter of listing 500 gaps and they're all the same.
Probably can. Yeah, probably really can.
Yeah, you probably can. And you'd have basically a nothing. In other words, it wouldn't help.
That's right.
But knowing which gaps are most important to be able to achieve your vision, that adds value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you might say, well, you know what? The way we specify requirements for reliability is just, it's wrong. It's not helping at all. That might be a very high priority gap. And then you'd work on improving your requirements for reliability. Mm-hmm. But let's say you do a pretty good job, but you do not a good job about accelerated testing. And yet that's something you need in order to achieve your vision. Well, suddenly that moves up in priority in terms of gaps.
Well, I think there's another element to that too, Carl. It's the ones that I think there's two philosophies of dealing with where the priorities are. One is you get better at what you're already good at, right? So if there's a pocket in your design team, like let's say the mechanical engineers, they do stress strength analysis, they do safety margining, they do a lot of things that incorporate design for reliability right into the design, right? But that's just what they do, and the rest of the organization doesn't really recognize that that's being done or why it's being done. Electrical engineers, yeah, say aren't doing that, and software folks are not doing that. Well, the gap might be, you know, you recognize that you need to get more proactive and you need to do more design for reliability. So you recognize and promote and encourage the mechanical folks, right? Simultaneously providing training and awareness to the other teams of what is design for reliability and their context and how does that make a difference. But then what I look for are those things that I can anchor to what they're already doing well, because that oftentimes has a much easier acceptance rate, because we're really after change management here, right?
This is a really important point you're bringing up.
Right. And yeah. And then there's another approach is saying, well, let's take our biggest weakness, right? Our area that we just don't know anything about. And let's say it's the accelerated testing. We don't do it now. We put it in a chamber on a standard test and it's not really an accelerated test. We're just not doing it. It's not serving us. Or the larger picture of we set great goals, but we don't know how to measure it. Right. So mm-hmm. You get no feedback. So that's starting from scratch and it can make huge strides. Right. So there's another philosophy. So it's oftentimes a judgment call and where your champions live within the organization and what's the right approach to move your program along, move the plan along to bridge those gaps. And then it's coupled with what I think you're going after, Carl, is which of those gaps are salient to that are on target to hit your goal. The vision part.
You're right. Now, let me highlight something for our listeners that that you brought up, Fred, which is essential, which is you also, in addition to gaps, you want to identify strengths. And the word strength doesn't fit into the concept of gap, but it needs to be part of that gap analysis.
Well, it does. It's the ones with the little gaps or a negative gap.
Yes, a negative gap. There we go. So the strengths are very important. And I would start with any summary of a gap assessment by starting, here's what we do well. Mm-hmm. And now here's what we can do better in a prioritized way. And that's a really essential thing. Now, I have a hunch that our readers or listeners have some ideas about this too. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And I
would
love to hear from people. Think about that. If you're listening to this podcast, this is a subject that's so important to be able to develop good reliability plans, is starting with that gap assessment and really starting before that with the vision. We'd love to know your thoughts.
Yeah, and you can get in touch with us directly through email or our contact pages on Ascendo's reliability.com about pages, or you can go to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and there's a contact form right there for you. Whatever works for you, we'd love to hear from you. That's a good point, Carl.
Yeah, great. Great conversation, Fred.
All right, thanks, Carl. We'll
see you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.